You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and people 65 and older are encouraged to get a flu shot. Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Community College are hosting a free weekly drive-through flu vaccine and COVID-19 testing clinic that will be held every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until March 31, 2021, at PCC's Cascade Campus, Parking Lot 1, located at 701 North Jessup Street in Portland. Entrance is on North Albina Street. You can drive through, bike through, or walk up to. To reserve an appointment for a flu shot or COVID test, call 503-988-8939. That's 503-988-8939. This campaign is a project of the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health and the Communicable Disease Services programs. It is made possible with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Public Service Announcements.
Welcome to the Talking Earth. This is the pre-inauguration edition, auguring a better future for us, we all hope, but I'm not talking politics, I'm talking poetry here for the next hour. Well, I'm not just talking. We have other people talking as well and other voices. It's a little tricky starting to make this show. It's only my second, but given COVID, when I can't have two or three poets in the studio together, which is how the Talking Earth has usually operated. So I have two poets recorded outdoors, Laura Winters on her porch and Jen Coleman in my garage, and I'll be reading some poems from Dennis McBride indoors at my desk. I'm starting with a poem from a non-local, Jack Spicer, who died at the age of 40 in San Francisco. I found this poem in the great jazz, poetry, and prose anthology, Moments Notice, published by Coffee House Press in 1992, but I only found this book a couple months ago. I'm reading this poem because I love it, but also because our first poet, Laura, is multiply linked with jazz. Song for Bird and Myself. I am dissatisfied with my poetry. I am dissatisfied with my sex life. I am dissatisfied with the angels I believe in. Neoclassical, like Bird, distrusting the reality of every note. Half real, we blow the sentence pure and real like chewing angels. Listen, Bird, why do we have to sit here dying in a half-furnished room? The rest of the combo is safe in houses, blowing bird brain dreamland. How warm and free they are. What right music. Man, we can't stay away from the sounds. We're crazy, Jack. We gotta stay here till they come and get us. Neoclassical, like Bird. Only two birds got into the rare book room. Miss Swift said, don't call a custodian. Put crumbs on the outside of the window. Let them come outside. Neoclassical. The soft line strains not to be neoclassical, but Miss Swift went to lunch. They called a custodian, four came. Armed like myrmidons, they killed the birds. Miss Munsterberg, who was the first American translator of Rilke, said, suppose one of them had been the Holy Ghost. Miss Swift, who was back from lunch, said, which? But the poem isn't over. It keeps going. Long after everyone has settled down comfortably into laughter, the bastards on the other side of the paper keep laughing. Listen, stop laughing. The poem isn't over. Butterflies. I knew there would be butterflies, for butterflies represent the lost soul, represent the way wind wanders, represent the bodies we only clasp in the middle of the poem. See, the starts have faded. They are only butterflied. Listen to the terrible sound of their wings moving. Listen, the poem isn't over. Have you ever wrestled with a bird, you idiotic reader? Jacob wrestled with an angel, I remind you of the image, or a butterfly. Have you ever wrestled with a single butterfly? Sex is no longer important. Colors take the form of wings. Words have got to be read. A butterfly, a bird, planted at the heart of being afraid of dying. Blow, bird, blow. Be neoclassical. Let the wings say what the wings meant, terrible and pure. The horse and cocktoe is as neoclassical an idea as one can manage. Writes all our poetry for us. Is Gertrude Stein? Is God? Is the needle for which, God help us, there is no substitute, or the ace of swords? When you are telling of fortune, who tells death, or the jack of hearts, whose gypsy fortune we clasp in the middle of a poem? And are we angels, Bird? That's what we're trying to tell him, Jack. There aren't any angels except when you and me blow 'em. So Bird and I sing outside your window. So Bird and I die outside your window. This is the wonderful world of Dixieland. Deny the bloody motherfucking Holy Ghost. This is the end of the poem. You can start laughing, you bastards. This is the end of the poem. And that's Jack Spicer in Moment's Notice, Jazz and Poetry and Prose. But now it's time for some voice other than mine, introducing Laura Winter. She's the author of 6 collections of poetry, broadsides, and performance projects. A number of her poems have been translated into other language. Improvised music is an influential factor in how Laura considers the use of the page and language. She performs with musicians nationally and internationally using language as an instrument. Her U.S.-Mexico Borderlands collaboration with photographer Terry Warpinski, Liminal Matter Fences and Liminal Matter Traces, are in the numerous special collections such as Stanford University Library, Amherst College, and Yale. Winter occasionally publishes Takeout, a magazine featuring visual art, writing, and music. I wish this was a video so you could see Laura with my desktop microphone on top of her gas grill on her porch over a street near Hawthorne. And now, Laura Winter.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Dan, for having me read with you tonight, read for you tonight. I'm going to be reading from a manuscript called Her Stunned Reflection. And it's a manuscript that is being worked on by Nine Muses Press. And hopefully it'll be out in 2021. And each poem, there's roughly 20 poems. And it's just a wide variety of work. But interleaved with each of the poems is a drawing by my husband, Brad Winter. And so it'll be a visual and a poem. And neither the poem nor the visual were made together. It's simply a wonderful random collection that Nine Muses is now in charge of organizing. They're going to put the sequencing together. So the first poem is Her Stunned Reflection. She felt all of the bird's strength before it bounced into the flower bread's embrace. Summer windows freckled with broken heads, a splatter of feather. The fern quivers, wrestling an instinct of flight, then ceases with the heel in her gaze. So the next poem is A Moon Between Us, and just during this time of COVID and our isolation and knowing of so many people who are passing, I thought I would read this about the remnants, A Moon Between Us. Moonlight seeps through drawn blinds, ignites mites and dust lamps float around the packing crates. Pieces of us shed the punctuation of history, a rewrite of our story. The closet full of hangers, each wears a husk of you. I pull out your bathrobe, the one with holes, and fold myself into a final embrace. Another element of what we're experiencing or have experienced during the year of 2020 is the number of people who who are homeless and who are living on the streets, not for any other reason than the resources have been pulled out from under them. And so this poem is called The Invisible. He wakes under Andromeda with a reef of bark dust and broken glass. Hearing children laugh, he peed his pants. Sparrows deliver news of the day, nothing to fill his pockets. What's so funny? Would you be happy living in your coat? Okay, this is a fun jazz poem from the L Line in Chicago, and I'm going to hopefully be able to do a little improvisation here with it. So, train bottle throttle woes. Okay, you know, sometimes you write a poem and you have no idea where it comes from, and I think this is one of those poems, but it has some things in it that I just like to really say out loud. So I decided to make this one happen. Some madness of weather funnels. A coughing old man spits on the barn's windows. An old rooster runs a tornado around his pen. Coo-ca-roo-ca-roo! The hen of bum leg, the hen of milky eye, settled to nest out pelting, laughter of rain, hail, rain. All night trees snap and chant, chill, chill, chillabone. Take the fence, funnel, and be gone. Okay, this is a poem from Chicago, and I'm going to do a little improvising with it. First, I'll read it through, and then I'll just do the improvisation. Train bottle throttle woes. To the breakfast diner under the L line, how do you keep the yolks from breaking? How do you keep the yolks from breaking? L-line under breakfast, the diner train bottle breakfast under the L-line. How do you keep the throttle rows from breaking? The yolks from breaking the yolks. And this is another one that I'm going to do a little improvisation with after I read it through. I like it because it references Jell-O, and I grew up in a time when Jell-O was a big deal for family picnics, and they put all kinds of things in them that made the Jell-O even, I don't know, worse. I remember the green grapes, the canned green grapes that were put in orange Jell-O. No. This is called Eating Sand. Jell-O on the beach, salmon-colored suits, splash and play. Seagulls and eagles scavenge for scraps. So many family picnics. Eating sand, Jell-O, Jell-O eating sand, salmon splash. Seagulls eat sand, eagles eat Jell-O. So the scraps of family picnics eat sand. Catholic obsession. I dream of heaven and hell, ceiling murals, shoes people wear, the Virgin's perfect plaster toes, clouds and worms. All rise, amen. Votives flicker, I dream of omelets, stations on the breakfast table, crackers and wine, a choir of stomachs wait in line. Her hat smells of bacon. I suck blood from a hangnail. Well, it's January, and this poem makes me think of warm, sunny days sitting on the grass by the river. Power of the pen. Ah, finally, warm sunshine. The footballs fly to glorious winter white thighs stretching for a catch, lingering in the pose. Whoosh, whoosh. Long braids with bright ribbons do head over heels cartwheels through the fresh mown grass. Kite tails flutter. Older couples walk arm in arm. Then my pen ran out of ink, and they all okay, back to our people who are living on the streets, and this poem, you know, sometimes you're given things that you're just too great to pass up, and so there's a few things in here that a few people that I was talking to on the streets had given me. When day begins again, a man emerges from a pile on the curb and kneels east. A woman shouts, "Eleanor Roosevelt going to sleep!" A lump of tarp trembles on the shop's doormat. There's a squabble brewing over scraps. Shake the blankets free of dreams and tuck back in. Wake when it's over, then to begin again. Okay. And for my final poll, excuse me here, I have to find it. Okay. My final poem is, I just recently stopped working at my day job, which was a great job, and we did a lot of training. And so this poem is about training. Training. Blindfolded and led around a room with corners of heroic proportions. The leader clucks a code, bruises will later decipher. Now jungle, now philodendron, what slips across my shin, stabs my thigh. I feel a grip on my shoulder. No duckling, no follow. So I was told I had a bonus poem, so I will end with a poem called Sleepwalker. And it's exactly that. It's about walking in your sleep. And I've talked to a number of people who in these past 4 years have taken to walking in their sleep and having crazy dreams, and so I thought this would be very appropriate. Sleepwalker. I have to go, go, go. Eyelids flutter, rapid fire. I have to go, go, go. Listen closely. The silent half of the conversation makes sense. The one who dresses me and puts me behind the wheel in the wee hours of the morning, vroom, vroom. I have to go, go, go.
And now she's gone. That was Laura Winter. Thank you, Laura. Hope you folks didn't mind the little sound burps. We were outside and trucks come by and the wind and all that, but that's COVID times for you, poetry on the porch. But now some poetry at the desk. My second guest poet is Dennis McBride. He's a local legend, and you'll know what I mean when you hear what I read. That's from Killing the Mockingbird, which came out in 2000 from Quiet Lion Press. Hunt down a copy and buy all the ones you can find. Grace. What strangeness comes over us? The things I've done that don't belong in a poem, and the other things I wanted to do that could not be put in one, and the mind that wonders what that means about the poem and about me, and why it is the poem saves us from these things and from the ones yet to come, like an exit door in a bad movie. We hope there is a God, silly and sinful and wise, who grades on a curve from an endless blue sky, almost as large as the heart, which keeps hurting and healing us and ends when it must, like the poem. I am a free ride. The sad ghost of the pumpkin shouts at me as I walk past the wood porch on the fifth day of November. I am unhappy, he says. You must take me with you. I do not need a ticket. You are a free ride. I could see it was a sad pumpkin and did not like its porch. I tried to ignore it and hurry past, but my mind does not have an electronic alarm to guard its premises. The pumpkin ghost chases me. I am one size smaller than courage, all the way to the shiny brown chestnuts that have fallen on the friendly sidewalk where I am safe. But the pumpkin ghost changes into a happy costume. Why does he do that? And we ride the quick merry-go-round, but not swift enough to slow fast time into changing its mind, or light from leaving its littered trail of sad daisies in the gray day. I want a candy story, a carnival, a movie theater, but time, the fast monster, cannot be slowed by bullets, destroyed by electricity. It takes me ahead, back to the school of clocks and bricks of mean maroon. I yell at the teacher in her classroom, the principal in his office, the bully on the playground, go away, go away. They don't. They stay. The book has poems and things that are more like prose poems, and sometimes hard to tell the difference. Vertigo at the Country Fair. Vertigo at the County Fair, excuse me. I finally found a use for August. Who would have thought there was so much fun and fecundity? It was the rinse and spin cycle of life. There was an exhibit of pygmy goats next to the booth for the Republican Party, and baby Republicans hugging their iron teddy bears, and Buddha cows like 500-pound Valiums unattached to their blue ribbons, and a small pen of sheep who were glassy-eyed and dazed, not knowing who to follow where. Over at the rodeo, Marlboro men and women gone mad were taking the S-curve at Le Mans at 140 miles an hour on wild bulls and putting their horses into four-wheel drifts around barrels. I left and went looking for real courage, a pharmaceutical salesman with a Prozac booth. Real courage is rare. It wasn't there. But smack in the middle, too good to be true, life everlasting, the vinyl siding display right next to the pro-life booth, the slip of the collective unconscious showing me. This was better than a UFO encounter group and a Baptist prayer meeting combined. There were blacksmiths with beards and suspenders, mountain men who couldn't keep the wolf from the door, so just kept shooing and moving on. Next to the restroom, inside a booth with a large sign, two-question test reveals the answer. Are you going to heaven? Sat an old expressionless couple like a stoic gospel gothic. I wanted to show my cards and raise them one. This is heaven. Where do we go from here? But I didn't want to chance turning cement to loose gravel on such a nice day. On the edge of the fairground, in two small spaces, was a Democratic booth next to the Alliance for the Mentally Ill, who were handing out iris bulbs to plant. I took one to plant, but didn't because I couldn't tell which end of the bulb was up, and it would have deepened my depression to think of that poor iris growing down into the darkness away from the sun. I wanted to get this into a poem, and I tried, but I couldn't do it. I realized the fair was just too big for a poem. There was a booth for everything but the blind making love, everything but that God fuck everyone was in search of, that we all came for, that was only fair. This is, I don't know if this was the piece that really got me in love with Dennis's work, but it's amazing. When Dennis wrote it, he posted it up on some phone poles in his neighborhood, and eventually a couple of police officers came to talk to him about it. Why I went to shoot the mayor. It was the woman with the shopping cart. I saw her when I was driving over the railroad tracks down in the Industrial River area. It was an early December evening, cold and wet and dark, and the wind was blowing hard. It was that kind of cold, sharp rain that blows sideways right through you and makes you want to get away from it right now, immediately, to stop it with anything you can, a car door or a quickly arriving bus or $100. The woman was just standing in it under the lamppost light. She didn't have an umbrella in the cart. She was staring up at the light, shaking her fist and yelling angrily. She was mad at it. The only relationship she had had turned bad on her. I drove on and left her there because it seemed there was nothing I could do for her, or rather, I didn't know where to begin, what to do, or how to do it. You see, in the first place, I didn't have a degree, which is a kind of mutant gene of our culture, but without which you are hardly fit for survival. I know the woman under the lamppost light didn't have a degree. If she had, she could have worked out her relationship with it. She would have known about conflict resolution theory and codependency insights. I thought about how the homeless advocate Mitch Snyder had spent his life trying to help them, and all he did was make a crummy TV movie about him. He didn't get anywhere close to what Martin Luther King did for his people, and he was killed for his effort. And then I thought how even the whole Soviet Union had tried to save the woman under the lamppost light and failed. So what could I do? Where could I begin, an unemployed middle-aged man without a degree? Anyway, it was then I realized all I could do was shoot the mayor, which really I didn't want to do, what with the season and all. It wasn't as bad as it sounds. I didn't want to kill the mayor, just a flesh wound, a modest act, really. You see, it's mainly that it ruins my evenings, when I have to pass the people with the shopping carts on my way home to my warmth and shelter and privacy. It tarnishes the joy I get from my toilet and bathtub and bed, and I just want somebody who is supposed to be responsible, to care, someone who represents us all, the human people who live here in our city. If I was the mayor and had a degree, I would be worried sick about people who had been that far away from good fortune, but the mayor, like me, drives past them to a warm home and is seen smiling and happy in the newspapers and on TV. Only the thing is, the mayor is not like me. The mayor has a degree and ought to be doing something about this immediately, right away. So that is why someone should shoot the mayor, only I can't because I've had a history of depression and had to go see someone with a degree, and you know what the media would do with that. They would take this civic-minded act and trash it. They would say I was deranged and unstable. The whole thing would be diminished or ignored. So it would be better if a city council member did it, Someone new and popular and clean, one of those Frank Capra, It's a Wonderful Life kind of people. Or even better, a governor or a senator should shoot the mayor. Someone with a clean record and a degree. If I were a governor or a senator and had a degree and drove past people who were cold and wet and had unhappy relationships with lamppost lights, I would shoot the mayor. And remember, too, this book came out in 2000. So, and who knows when Dennis actually wrote the piece. So, you know, poets are prescient. Bad things don't change that quickly. And I'll close with this piece. Last of the Red Hot Lovers. Last night, my 8-year-old cat, Winnie, showing her aversion to compartmentalizing, knocked the glass of wine into my glass of beer with her carefree tail, and I just left my friend Debbie's house where her two dogs, Ginger and Snoopy, came in from the yard after rolling in shit, smiling with the radiant joy of deliverance. That morning, Jeff, the manager at the mobile home park I was going to move into, told me there are no pets allowed. Just people so concerned with keeping their wine and beer and shit separate. They'll use the best of their minds to build a Manhattan Project or defend a dissertation when there are probably no pets allowed. Like my grandmother always said, you don't need to lead a horse to water. He can find his own way. It's the people in the Chevy with the Bible and roadmap in their lap pulling into the gas station for directions that are always getting lost. You just heard five pieces by Dennis McBride, Killing the Mockingbird. Much love to you, Dennis. And now it's time to give you another break from my voice with another poet I recorded, Jen Coleman. Jen Coleman is the author of two books of poetry, We Denizens from Furniture Press and Psalms for Dogs and Sorcerers from Trembling Pillow Press. Her poem, Write Me a Poem, Says Mom About Death, can be found in issue 1 of the Oxeye Reader, and she'll be reading that poem for you real soon. Jen works for the Environmental Defense Fund, and her poetry work is populated by a wide range of creatures, though she also gives special attention to the human condition. We tried recording on my porch in the deep southeast, but the wind was too audible, so I pulled my car out of the garage, wind-free inside, the door doesn't close, and put the desktop mic on top of a recycling bin. And here's Jen Coleman.
I was born a boss. I was born hot. I was born to bear blood on my talons. I was born a force. I was born fierce. Before I became a baby girl, I was born with a razor tongue ablaze. I was born to a love so fierce. Before I became a baby girl, I was born to love like love from a fury of blades and blazes. I grew before I became a baby. Before I became, I grew lightning to bleed. I grew a thunder-fat, magical mama ass. Before I became a girl, I grew into a magical mama other, an other mama to mother what I will. A mama to my other is what I will. A will to will is what I will. I will not parent hate. I will not be a parent to hate. I will not build apparatus to hate. I will not prepare hate. I will not parade hate. I will not repair hate. I will not parent fear. I will not be a parent to fear. I will not build or repair fear. I will not parade or prepare fear. I will not birth it. I was born from love to love furiously. I was born in love to birth that way. I prepare dissent. I parade defiance. I repair faith. I build an abode. I will build an abode and love dissent. I build an abode in love. I repair faith. I build an abode in love to love and die that way. I was born from love to love and die that way. Soliloquy, March 23rd, 2020. That eternal thing with feathers has conviction that it all makes sense, no matter how it turns out. No matter how things turn out, hope is an absurd bird. September Elegy. Now that wildfire smoke has passed, and it's the first day of fall, I can see all the colors. And with the rain, the air gets crystalline and predictable, like atoms in a space lattice, only not. More like a convex lens, so clear and focused, I can almost see every pine cone on a tree up the block. But I can't. Also, I can't see death, or I can't feel it clearly. Not the way I can see apples rot on branches where crows pecked out a grub and left beak-sized holes. Everyone alive and everyone that ever died, I can't clearly feel them, or feel the fire stoked by wind, or stump holes smoldering, or all that is lost to smoke, or lost to breath, lost slowly. I felt hope, and I said, hope. And just when it came over my lips, I felt a blister pop, a red ring of pain where I had burned my arm to keep from dropping the whole meal. Just now, a mother outlived her fierce and beautiful daughter. Just now, a mother outlived her fierce and beautiful daughter. I have no words for that loss that haven't been said by wordless ancient poets rocking and keening. And the words I feel are like rock and keen, because they are like nothing like the word like, except maybe like the K, without which, well, like is lie. K is a voiceless plosive, because grief is a voiceless plosive, sometimes, which is to say occlusive, which is to say a sound from a stuck thing, which is, after all, the thing I'm talking about without looking directly at it, concentrating instead on K, out of privacy, embarrassed to witness what is so unthinkable. There it is again, not okay, a cough, like smoke, like a knee on the throat. Clear, bright September days and unthinkable grief are a pattern now, like atoms stacked in a space lattice. I see patterns everywhere. It's comforting and uncomfortable. Let me take you back to chaos, to fractals and interconnections and kiss, and try to feel more clearly low open vowels under the September moon. Write me a poem, says Mom, that I would like, about death. When death came and left again with my father, the moment dried to a desert, waiting for cold drops to cut through. Here in this small space disappearing, the ripest part of me softens in the far corner where the dark will flower. Death came and left again, which is, I mean to say, my father became gone. Not that he left, but that he was so far more gone than he'd ever been. And his body was there with me in the night, a moment unprotected, as if a hot, very hot landscape I would call dry, as in barren, but not without sweetness. And waiting only in that I was the one, not the moment, but I waiting for the moment to pass along to something, to anything, with things in it, like creatures in it, like life. The moment was a desert landscape in which I waited not really for rain, but for something cold to cut through. And how small that vast desert was, even as it disappeared. And in that small, far corner in the corner of space disappearing, the ripest part of me softened into a dark loam in the middle of the night, in the heat. It wasn't the dark I was in that will flower, but the dark in my own far corner where it is ripe and will probably eventually, one would think, flower. When I say space disappearing, I mean the moment of me there alone with the goneness of my father and with his body. And it was not the space that disappeared, but the alonewithness, which was disappearing because, in fact, there in the smallest corner of not my own self, but of the room in which I sat alone with my father's body, there in the corner was my mother, fast asleep. This is not a poem that my mother would like, after all, about death. Mom and I take a walk in the bright, bright fall day. It is hard for her to think of what is in one hand, a maple leaf, an acorn cap, an oak leaf, when there is an ash leaf, an acorn cap, on ahead, and it is hard to think of what one foot might be doing when the other is going forward. The older we get, says Mom, the more we think we might fall. And then you look at the trees, and they're falling, she says, that's all. Around the block, the sidewalk is hard, and hard to think, too, in the bright, bright blue, hard against the bold, crude tree branches, which are hard not to think of when the moment is afraid to fall, and then you look at the trees. That's all. Mom says, "Can I tell you about your dad?" "Yes," I say. "He died peacefully," she says. "I was with him," she says. "We held hands, and I read to him, and then in the morning they had taken him away." The poem my mother writes is a true poem, true to tenderness, to lifetime and a certain nature, and true to a space disappeared, and within that small space, my father having become gone, and his body there with me as I was softening, all disappeared. How can we exist here on the far end of dark? Like the avocado forgotten in the basket above the sink, we will ripen beyond flesh, skin a shell around a sort of spaceship of a seed that will launch into the mud universe. I say so, but I know my spaceship of a seed is nestled already in the mud universe. I am becoming which is the far end of dark. We can exist here because we are me, and I am the far end of dark, which is to say, also what I am becoming. When the dark flowers, it will be my spaceship. Existence isn't the same thing as life, which isn't the same thing as it is, which is to say, how can we exist is more like how are you than how is it that you are. How do you do? How is it that you do? How is it that you do what you do in the mud universe I am becoming? Mom is beginning to forget the poem that she wrote. Sometimes Mom doesn't remember that Dad is gone. How can she exist here at the far end of dark is a different question altogether. She also has a spaceship seed. I don't know whether she is becoming a mud universe or will she simply be, come. Come to the mud universe where it is Halloween and the skeletons want balloons and candy, just like princesses and unicorns. They want a parade. They have real bones and lungs and hearts. Pretending to die, kids keep a smile from breaking through the calm. On Halloween, I go as a spaceship avocado seed surrounded by thick flesh, and I am listening to the jug band and watching babies dance in their costumes with plump knees, skeletons and unicorns with round, supple appetites for candy. Tonight is not about total goneness, but it is about the weird truth of the left-behind body and how it is that it can be with its real bones that make a kid laugh. How strange to have your bones there dancing and to eat candy and carry a balloon among the unicorns and the boss baby, yes, the baby in a pinstripe boss suit, just as weird and funny as a dancing skeleton. Death, when it is only the left behind body, is so weird and fun and funny. These tiny kids, alive on the planet, somehow know already what death looks like in the cartoons. A body laid out clutching a daisy to the chest, eyes closed, which is what Dad's body looked like, minus the flower, and with eyes open. But I know what to do according to no cartoon I ever remember seeing, and yet somehow all the cartoons. And what I do is I close his eyes by running my hand over them, the palm of my hand gently over them, except they don't close. And so I shake with a sort of subdued fear, because what else do you do? And ultimately, it was not I, or my mom sleeping in the corner, who came and cleaned and dressed my father's body, but a nurse with hands and palms far bigger than mine, that knew what to do. When I close my eyes, I see dark tree branches against the blue, blue sky. Maple leaves shine, bursting red from yellow, one fully pink, lit by its own light, one as big as the nurse's hand, and many small orange fingernails and hands and faces fall and fall into the soft gray sidewalk. Write me a poem, says Mom, that I would like about death. In fall, the babies, babies, babies of spring monarch butterflies fly west to feast and rest on eucalyptus trees. Can we call them babies? Can we call out to them translucent and bright against the blue, blue sky? This is about monarch butterflies and butterfly babies, and because there are babies of babies of babies of babies, there is death. Because what they say the butterflies migrate, and they do it, is the way they make so many bodies. Butterfly bodies that make up a body in fluttering pieces, in flutterings many miles long, but not one body, and then another, because there are bodies that are left behind, dark and plump, abandoning flight, a meal for a toad, a rat, a wasp, a grosbeak, or bright orange-winged oriole, which becomes a meal in turn for a bright orange-furred house cat. A butterfly body is 2 weeks, maybe four, and then done. Unless it is the butterfly born to overwinter in its body at the end of the journey in the eucalyptus grove, where it grows thin over winter and its fiery cape wears away and its fiery cape pales in a grove of worn and thinning fires. This is about every body. This is about the needs of every body. This is about a bright flight. I tell my brother that when I hold a moment tight to my chest, I have to check and see if I'm being a coward. You're not a coward, he says. How can you be a poet and be a coward? Oh, I can be a poet and be a coward. I have things to say that I don't, about the moment alone with the goneness of my father, and in the corner my mother breathing deeply. I have things to tell that I don't, about how I wanted to hold that desert in my pocket. Keep it as mine, to fill with things, like creatures, like crowds of butterflies and hockey fans and pedestrians and sea lions and life. Write me a poem, says Mom, and here it is. Near the eucalyptus grove, with fading butterfly flutters at the seashore, there is water lapping over sand, lapping over, lapping the sand. The moment between land and water is not disappearing or forgotten, as it never really actually was a moment. And there you are, little droplet, cutting through. There you are, little fog bear, sweet tear, little drop of salt spray on a wharf full of sea lions, full of fish.
You've just been listening to Jen Coleman here on Talking Earth. Again, I'm Dan Raphael, and I'm going to read a poem of mine, which had originally started as trying to do a collaboration with Jen Coleman. And thank you, Jen. But it didn't work out, and I just wrote the poem myself. This meets no mystery. It's patented. Lamina animals, more than turduckens. As evolution is to turducken, so this leap of transgenetics with surgery or viral invasion, I am he and it, they and those. What good are falcon wings with a brown bear torso, as if the genes were inside out? Should have turned left at Albuquerque, read the instructions, shouldn't have trusted the gullible person's satellite system kept aloft by the shopping fox channels. You can never be too rich or ready, never separate enough. If I don't eat what's here, I must move or starve, cataloging my inner ecosystems, barely holding it together with the constant pressure of mirrored everything, an email every minute from an algorithm who knows me well. When one ear is 3 seconds ahead of the other, when the LED streetlights cast triple shadows and pixel fog, they who can climb on air have the best chance of survival. Should I trade my arms or my legs for wings? Liminally intimate, in time I date. 5 centuries ago, this body would have brought me riches or early death. The flying people are always the first to go. All the evolved races that saw us coming and vanished with barely a trace. Always some wise-ass teaser, like those infernos pretending to be stars. Does Pluto care how we classify it? Expanding into extra dimensions like a cosmic jellyfish, the aurora borealis, a glimpse of someone's rippling edge. All that illumination can only come in the darkest days. Maybe if we stop looking for new species, fewer will be extinguished. Maybe if we stop looking for more carbon to shroud our planet, maybe if a couple billion people were transported to a better, less crowded and fragile place, we'll never understand what whales, morels, squirrels, or eagles tell us. And could we trust them? If they got close enough to hear, they'd be close enough to eat. So that was dedicated to Jennifer. And I'm just going to carry through trying to make some links. This is a poem I just wrote 2 days ago. So let's be fresh and spontaneous a little bit. Too many words to start a morning. Before coffee, before the sun, when a fighter jet is my alarm clock, all my hands' heat left the skin to stoke the muscles, fingers snapping to silent music. The stomach knows what should come next. Takes at least 2 flights of stairs, maybe the same ones twice for the day to officially begin. As when I get to the kitchen, all the clocks reset to 7. The radio is scratching the air to be let out, already knowing what language today will be. Is today bake day? Wash day? See how far I can walk before the rain gets here? I'm dressed for 3 months ago, enough material to clothe 3 people. The thinner my hair gets, the more inventive its functionality. Wanting to jump but afraid of landing, thinking I should stand but I already am. Hands, come back here! Is that a cat, a loaf of rye, or 3 pairs of socks? The air more textured than usual. Maybe I should treat it like another element, taking advantage of mystery, unwanted newness, open before inhaling, take inventory before letting go. The less I move, the more everything else grows, crowding beyond what I can see, a door from last week, virgin recyclables. I have the secret names of the faucet and stove tattooed near my elbow, but sometimes forget which arm. As if one of my legs was 5 years older, as 5% of a dog is just enough. The light knows when to turn on, but then don't want to stop or change. Walls unable to prove their assertion. If we treated floors and ceilings like just 2 more walls. I don't call them doorways, just ways. How some square foot of carpet avoids being stepped on for months. I only notice the windows when something moves past, like a different me. A me with wings, a me of external combustion. The best indicator of time's passage is aroma, scents peeping from surfaces to see if today's begun. Yeah, I write a lot of poems in the morning, I guess because it's quiet, because I've been dreaming or trying to escape my dreams. Those are the kinds of dreams I have, I don't know. But this is poetry and COVID. Here's another poem of mine, and it kind of links in that it was inspired by a piece in the jazz anthology I mentioned earlier on, Moment's Notice, which again, I highly recommend. And it was a piece by Nathaniel Mackey, who gives me the title. My heart cries out for obstruction, Nathaniel Mackey. My twitching fingers know the air's too thin to climb or weave. My feet reluctant to leave the floor, but town is closing soon and the highway needs its quota. You can only buy so much time without worrying where to put it, exchanging interest for growth, an unstable stillness, the momentum of a sentence untethered by breath, my lungs steadily changing pages, uncertain. Something yeasted and forgotten, a fermented state of mind stoppered with cheekbones, hesitation reduced to lard, rendering in charcoal, squid blood and tar sands, the inevitability of stars. More error than margin, too much space for a line, too much rumble for a bag. Keys keep turning in my pocket, but nothing ignites. My deodorant smells like gasoline, my mouthwash from a forgotten river. No industry without dust, no progress without rogues, out of the blue and into the gray. Always leave a couple spoonfuls for the next meal. If the knife's not used for cooking, something else will be cut. On Thursdays, the cooks pick the music, and the plates are glad to wash themselves. My appetite's in a minor key. When my earworm is a bass jam I was playing last night, while the garlic I smell from the kitchen won't be peeled and chopped for a couple hours, on the brink of an almost lethal brilliance, eyes cropping what the windows allege, a 20-foot shadow rolls slowly down my street, looking for an address. And from a poem just a couple days old to a poem almost 5 years old, written on the day that Prince died. Never meant to. Never meant to cause you any sorrow. Never meant to cause you any pain. Not my words. I never meant to cause to you or anyone. Things just happen. You go to college, you get a job, have a good life. When the U.S. was at its peak, something we'll never see again, so many things we'll never see again. Even if I was still here to see them, still able to see, focus slipping each year. The part of the brain that hallucinates, the part that brings up the complete lyrics of Tangled Up in Blue I'd never thought of before. You look like the silent type, more possum than killdeer, as chameleon as 6'6", 200 pounds can be, that inner stillness to stay below the tree line, avoid short, tense drunks who want to take on the biggest guy around, bottle shard to chin, fist jamming glass into windpipe, cause I wasn't who I thought I was, cause my hometown had become a foreign country, West Side Story starring John Wayne and Aretha Franklin, too white to be a temptation. Don't know where you learned to dance, but I know it wasn't here. Body memory spasms, like a weather vane stuck in the ground, lightning rod for an antenna, Tom Waits growling, "Welcome to Raphael's Silver Cloud Lounge." Inside that cloud, a 24-hour city where the sun refused to shine. Why is the rain black? Why am I the only one without extra holes, things tied and jangling? When I don't trigger a metal detector, the uniformed ex-lineman puffs up and steps toward me. I cast a wearisome shadow even when the light's from all directions. My spirit animals are hummingbird and otter. My favorite month is the second wettest. Any song can be improved with a fluid, keening guitar solo, an extra half beat, just shy of a fifth, a line as thick as my pinky. The wind through my hair sounds like a low helicopter reporting on the insect traffic, the progress of invasive plants. No indication that 82nd Street will hatch anytime soon. I'm dyslexic about danger and always run toward it. A Buddhist physicist, drinker of malt liquor and barrel-aged microbrews, following to the lighthouse with Dude Messiah. Give it a spin. Ease off the clutch. Every two gears have another gear between them. Have another gear between them. Who made the road? Who painted the sky? Why most guitars have one more string than a hand has fingers, those few who don't need electricity to be amplified. Get down, get over it, get out of here. Not a question of being invited. Dressed like I'm working the door, tending bar in rhinestone shades. When you're looking at nothing, no one's looking back. I smell like paper, and sometimes get asked how many pages. No sequel, no trilogy. Working on the map inside my chest skin, my back cover blurred with microorganisms from refugee camps. This body's still a single continent, but India may break loose soon. Entering is the easy part. Under someone's shoe, flat against the back, folded like a pizza box. Some buildings so large, inside's not the right word, like a biodome disguised as a Walmart. My city's reduced to the parts I've been to. When I'm next to a door just as someone's fleeing out, four more doors opening and what I thought a wall, I'm chasing where everyone was. Dancing to loud music in a crowded room where everyone's too mesmerized to collide can cure anything for a while, or so much that only exists when I think about it. I couldn't close my eyes in time to keep those two cars from crashing. When I'm no longer able to go fast enough to hurt myself, when what I thought a chair is someone's Mercedes in the neighborhood, I don't meet the dress code. My money's not good enough here. I don't have perfect pitch, but can still hurl a decent sidewinder. Before before you know which way it's breaking, I'm heading for the fence. Whiskey bottle, brand new car, oak tree, you're in my way. When I woke up this morning was Judgment Day. Tomorrow's inauguration. I'm Dan Raphael. This is Talking Earth, KBOO Radio. Love to everyone.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours.
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on my